On this episode, we discuss The Humanity Bureau,
starring Nicolas Cage.
Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Oh man, it's been a long time, Dan. It's me, Stuart Wellington.
And over here, Elliot Kalin, confirming that yes, for us, it has been a long time. Even though for you, the listeners, it's only been the regular 2 weeks since an episode.
All right. Well, I guess that's a peek behind the curtain. People needed to know how long it was.
I mean, in actuality, that's not the case because last week we recorded a Max Fun donors only bonus episode. So it's actually been less time than usual between recordings for us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, you're probably wondering why I haven't said Max Fun Boners Only Donus episode, and that's because I guess I just did.
Okay.
Okay.
Asked, a rascal.
Asked and answered, I suppose. So, guys.
So what do we do on this here Flophouse?
That's what I was going to ask. Dan, what do we do on this here Flophouse?
Well, we watch a bad movie, and then we talk about it, and boy, howdy.
What time of year is it? Elliot?
Hold on a second. Now, I'm assuming Tiny Elliot is a reference to the Nicolas Cage character Tiny Elvis from SNL. Not just the fact that I'm a shorter than average human being.
Or Tiny Tim also.
Tiny Tim, the Nicolas Cage character from A Cage Miss Carol. Hey, wait a minute. It's Cage Miss. That's right. It's that special time at the end of the year when we celebrate the recent works of our patron saint, Saint Nicholas. Nicolas Cage, that is, the greatest actor in the world who makes the worst choices in the world.
Often.
Wait, what?
He often makes the worst choices.
That's
and we're not just talking about his choice of property or, I don't know, hairstyle.
We're not talking about his choice to overstretch his finances by buying castles and a smuggled Mongolian Tyrannosaurus skull. We're talking about his choice in roles. Because here's the thing, guys. Let me lay it with you. Let me just be honest here. I do really think Nicolas Cage is one of the best actors ever, but he's not always in the best roles. But maybe today will be a little different. Dan, what movie did we watch today as if it wasn't already announced at the top of the show?
We watched The Humanity Bureau. Now, you probably have never heard of this movie. I mean, that's the slim pickings this year when it comes to Nicolas Cage.
Slim Pickens is in it?
How great would it be if Nicolas Cage did a movie that was a biopic of Slim Pickens? I would love that. That would be amazing.
So the last like year or so, Nicolas Cage has made like a couple of indie hits.
Yeah.
Mandy and Mom and Dad are both really great. And we had to hop over to the old internet movie database and see what movies he's turned out that aren't those two movies.
Yeah. What the ones he pooped out in private.
Pooped out in private. That's the name of the Criterion Eclipse collection of these Nicolas Cage movies is Nicolas Cage pooped out in private. So Nicolas Cage, it used to be that there were glorious riches of bad Nicolas Cage movies. Now there's still plenty of them, but they're not as high profile. Yeah, and this is perhaps the lowest profile Nicolas Cage movie we've ever done. And that's
When I was a boy, guys, you could just stroll through the fields and there'd be Nicolas Cage movies all over the ground and you could just pick them up and eat them right there.
Yeah, but then climate change and Nicolas Cage movie swarms have been dropping in population very drastically, and it's an important part of the bad movie ecosystem. So, guys, let's do everything we can to reuse Nicolas Cage movies, recycle Nicolas Cage movies, and the other one, the other word for conservation that I don't remember. reduce. No, we don't want to reduce Nicolas Cage. We want to reduce.
No, that's the opposite.
Reduce non-Nicolas Cage movies.
Thank you.
But yeah, I feel like we grew up during a golden age when Nicolas Cage was making good movies in theaters and also his bad movies were released in theaters. And now his bad movies are mostly low budget things that he needs the work. To coin a phrase that's never been said before, these are the movies he kind of pooped out in private.
Yeah.
That's a new phrase I just invented.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, Dan, how did you hear about this movie, The Humanity Bureau? Because I had never heard of it until we started. Or, Stuart, were you the one who brought it up?
You brought it up, right?
I mean, I told you the same thing. But I looked at IMDb and I'm like, what movies? Which one has the dumbest name? Okay, let's pick that one.
Now, is this a sequel to The Adjustment Bureau or perhaps a prequel or squeakle to The Adjustment Bureau? Another movie
I don't know.
About a bureau.
I've never seen The Adjustment Bureau, so I can't tell
you. I think it's a movie about people wearing hats, from what I could tell.
Yeah, it's about the band Men Without Hats before they lost their hats.
Is that why they're called that?
Yeah, I think so.
Because they were always known for their hats before that.
Yeah, then, yeah. It's the basis for John Klassen's hit children's book, I Want My Hat Back. That's one for all the parents.
Well, they wanted to differentiate that band from the band The Men, and they had to specify because The Men apparently always wear hats. Oh, whatever.
Anyway,
this is a rich vein.
So The Humanity Bureau falls under the heading of dystopia movies, and it also falls under the heading of worst driving CGI I've ever seen in a feature film.
The bad driving CGI set up an expectation that this movie was not prepared to follow through on, because I was laughing out loud at the first scene. I'm like, this is going to be great. And then the rest of the movie was just a slide into disappointment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the bad, yeah, they're it's like he's driving through a video game.
I want to just give a quick mention of warning to Flophouse listener and special effects expert Todd Vaziri. Todd, we're going to be talking about bad CGI on this one. So get ready to defend CGI effects on Twitter. That's what he does sometimes.
I figured that any moment after that first scene, the camera would just pull back and you would see that it's on the set of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I mean, there are times
when I was like, oh, he's just sitting in a fake car in front of a TV at an amusement park or something like
that.
Yeah,
I texted a friend and I was like, there are rear screen projection effects in Alfred Hitchcock movies that look better than this.
And that he also does the classic thing of moving the steering wheel way too much. He'll be driving down a straight road and he's constantly swerving the wheel as if, I guess, he's trying to avoid Koopa shells in the road that banana peels that Wario threw in his path.
Yeah, I mean, Wario's a fucking awesome asshole.
Now, what's your feeling about Waluigi?
I mean, obviously, I feel positive about Waluigi, but, you know...
Is that Wario's obvious?
I mean, it's obvious. He's Waluigi.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like Wario was my, like, first and greatest love. So, you know, I'm going to go with Wario on this one. Small business owner Wario.
Okay, guys, so should we talk about what this movie is about?
I suppose so.
It's not just about watching Nicolas Cage pretend to drive poorly in front of a very bad special effect. It's also
Before we start, this is possibly the most rote story that I have ever seen on the Flophouse.
Yeah, someone wrote it, Dan. Ba 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 ba. I think that's the 100th time I've done that joke on the Flophouse. Ba 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 ba. Confetti, 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 confetti. Parade, parade, Mardi Gras, body blow, knockout.
Wow. I'm impressed that you set up all that confetti ahead of time.
Now I
got to
clean it up.
Well,
the 80th time I did that joke, I was like, I got to get ready for number 100 because it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. There's a time when Dan's going to say it again and I'm going to say it again. And it's going to be the 100th time. And then I'm going to get a free Toys R Us shopping spree, just like on Nickelodeon.
Okay. I don't know who's sponsoring you, but that's great.
He said Nickelodeon, dude. Nickelodeon's doing it, right?
Okay.
They still make stuff, right? That's a channel.
I mean, not the television
channel.
Not the television channel Nickelodeon, but an actual old-timey movie theater that charges a nickel to watch that train get into the station. And
sure.
Yeah.
Well, Elliot's recommendations keeps driving them into our theater.
But Dan, what were you going to say? It's a rote movie?
Yeah, it's just it's the most basic.
Is that because
dystopia.
Somebody wrote it?
Ba 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 boom! 101 Dalmatians.
Okay, there wasn't much more to what I was going to say.
It's a very by the numbers, soulless, very bland and dull dystopia. And a lot of filmmakers, they don't have a lot of money in the budget for special effects, not even realistic car driving effects. They don't have a big cast, and they make up for it with, I guess, the most valuable and yet cheapest effect of all, which is
what's that?
Imagination. Which is the ability.
Have you been talking to Vin Diesel again?
Yeah, the ability to come up with concepts or ideas that, or even dialogue or scenes or characters that we've never seen before and really blow us away. The creators of the Humanity Bureau decided not to go that route, and instead they would go the opposite route of just kind of doing what other people have done before, and we'll talk about that. So the Humanity Bureau, we open on text. Oh boy, everyone's favorite thing to open on. Is there, how many good movies are there that open on text? Is it just the Star Wars movies?
Dan?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I guess, also opens on text.
Conan the Barbarian.
Okay, Conan the Barbarian. Okay. Has there been a good movie in the past, like, 10 years that opened on text? Again, barring Star Wars movies.
Probably not.
Well, Flophouse listeners, right on in. If you got an idea, send it to text@theflophouse.com. It's not a real email address. So maybe just write into the regular email address.
Yeah, I mean, and that's barring, like, we're not talking about, like, credits. We're talking about descriptive text.
Yeah, explanatory text. I mean, most movies start with credits, and many of them are very good. Okay, but the text tells us that in the near future, the climate collapsed. And that caused society to collapse. And America has walled off its cities and created the Humanity Bureau, whose job is to relocate people who are considered burdens on society. That's right. Mm-hmm. We're living in one of those post-collapse dystopias that somehow both, I guess, like, very socialist and very, like, libertarian conservative. It's a movie that feels like it's political, but it actually does not have any political ideas in its head. Cut to Nevada. Nicolas Cage, our hero, Agent Noah Cross of the Humanity Bureau. And let's talk about that name, Noah Cross, for
a
moment.
That's a real name.
Now, that's
fucking awesome is what it is,
but
right?
But that's the name of the villain in Chinatown, is Noah Cross.
Really?
Is he
a vampire?
Yeah, so wait, you're saying it's the same character?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so...
By vampire, I mean, like, that's the name of a daywalker who hunts down other vampires. I mean, it's pretty clear. And he has some kind of Krull-like thrown blade weapon.
Yeah, of course. Sure. Perhaps. So is that what the Kruller is named after? Because it's shaped kind of like Krull's blade weapon?
I can only assume so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. What about a bear claw?
In original commercials for Krullers, they had guys throwing Krullers into people's mouths.
Now, was it a tie-in with Krull? Was that the thing?
Yeah, like
it was...
yeah. They got Liam Neeson for the commercials.
Wow, really?
Because he plays the thief character in that movie.
That reminds me of when Dark Man came out and they introduced darkness and rooms without lights turned on. And he was like having trouble sleeping with the lights on. Well, there's something new in town, and they turned the lights off. And it was the first time I ever saw a room with no lights on. And I was, and it's funny that people don't realize that darkness came as a tie-in with Darkman. It didn't exist.
Yeah, I remember that commercial played during Saturday morning cartoons, and a couple of kids see Durant standing in the doorway, and they're like, "Oh no, it's Durant!" And then they turn off the light, and they're like, "He's gone." Thanks, yeah, darkness.
We all remember those commercials. Anyway, I wanted to be one of those kids so bad. Anyway, so we're in Nevada. Nicolas Cage, Agent Noah Cross. He's driving terrible green screen behind his car. Get used to it because it's going to be the best character in the whole movie is the bad green screen. And he's got a hologram iPad, my other favorite character, which seems to be, if anything, less efficient than a normal iPad. It seems like he has to do a lot more extra work to get it to work and tell him things. But it's also one of those movies where it's like, we got to show this is the future. He's got an iPad that he can talk to, and it talks back to him. But that technology already exists in the modern world, so we'll have a little hologram floating above it all the time, and that'll, I assume, really drain the battery power.
I feel like companies would only create hologram cell phones if they really want to cut down on people sending like dick pics and like people like surfing porno sites on their phone.
Because it projects it above the phone.
Yeah, because everyone would see that person like lazily scrolling through Pornhub.
Now, they don't have to be doing it lazily. Maybe they're doing it with a purpose.
I mean, I think I'm instilling a little bit of my own personal life into this joke.
And also these holograms look like holograms. I mean, they look like Princess Leia being projected out of R2-D2. So, like the porn that you would see on it would not be that... Like, the resolution would be pretty low, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's not the optimum way to...
When people look at porn on the internet, the thing they're first worrying about is this 4K?
Yeah, they're like,
is this Blu-ray quality?
Is this HD? I won't look at it if it's not.
Yeah.
Is this bootleg stream of a porn video in the best possible visual quality. Is this 3D TV?
Look, I can't get off to standard definition anymore. I'm sorry.
You need to see pores.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now, speaking of seeing pores, there's a lot of poor people in this movie that have to be that have to be relocated by the Humanity Bureau. So let's get back to it. So Nicolas Cage is also driving. It's an old kind of like muscle car type car, but clearly
it's an El Camino.
It's an El Camino, but he's had it retrofitted somehow. They mentioned at some point that they haven't made new cars in 30 years or something. Like that. They're constantly like upping the ante of what things are not around in the future, because they're like, they haven't built new cars in a long time. And later it's like, here's a can of coffee, very rare, hard to get. And then later on, someone's like, we're going up to a lake. And someone's like, they don't have lakes anymore.
Well, there's a moment where, they talk about how rare coffee is. And then later on, you see a guy drinking a takeout cup of coffee.
There's a part later on where Nicolas Cage has to trade his expensive watch for a can of beans. And it's like, okay, hold on a second. Just how bad is everything that's going on? Because we also see later that he has a Monet in his apartment. Like, this is Last Man on Earth, and like Will Forte, he's just been walking around the world stealing treasures. But okay, he goes to a motel where they're selling unlicensed pure water, which is not okay to do. And he sees this old
and that unlicensed pure water is clearly an Evian bottle with the like label removed. On one hand, like, I like that like detail that they have to scrounge for that sort of thing, but most likely it was just a lazy prop choice.
Yeah, as lazy as a Pornhub browser.
Yep.
Now, this something that made me think of before when you said lazily scanning through. It was like a Goofus and Gallant for adults, where it's like Goofus lazily browses through Pornhub. Gallant has a specific fetish that he's searching for. So Nicolas Cage has a meeting with an old man who is appealing the decision for him to be relocated to New Eden. New Eden is where they send all the people who cannot support themselves financially. Now, they're told it's a place where everyone gets everything they want, and it's all candy and elves and comic books and all that stuff. But, he says he knows the truth, and it's like, yeah, of course, it's a place where they kill people. Like, what else is it going to be? Like, from the first moment, I mean, I wasn't sure if the audience was ever supposed to believe that New Eden is a good place. Nicolas Cage seems to think so. Every other character in the movie seems to be totally aware that it is a place where they kill people who go there.
Yeah, I mean, I assumed right off the bat that it was going to be a place where they kill people and turn them into food, and New Eden was going to be a pun for New Eden.
Stuart, that is so much more imagination and wit than anyone put into this movie. Because as we see later, we'll get to it, the people who get killed in New Eden just get turned into ashes, which are then packed into boxes to be used when you want to threaten somebody who works for you. So the old man is like, I don't want to go there, but it's a crime not to be a productive citizen. It's never really explained what productivity is, since everyone in the movie is either a non-productive burden who's running from the government or a government agent. There's nobody in between. And so... this turns into a gunfight. The old man pulls a gun on Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage, our hero, we're introduced to him shooting and killing an old man.
I'm just going to go get some receipts from underneath my mattress in here.
That's the thing. Nicolas Cage has to audit their finances, and he's looking through papers that look like they're from the Gold Rush era. It's like they put, guys, you did not have to use a match and coffee to stain and burn these documents to make them look like pirate maps. They can just look like old receipts.
And I love that the establishing shot for this guy's rundown apartment is, which they use a couple times, is always a close-up shot of a plate with old food on it covered in mealworms.
Yeah, because they all live in a Cenobite Hellraiser world, I guess.
Now, I think we were speaking over you when you're making this point, Elliot, but it struck me that, yes, like our introduction to our hero is him shooting a destitute old man.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a guy who's working for bad people. We know that, but it is a very unsympathetic way to be introduced to Nicolas Cage. At the very least, make the person that he's going after a threat in some way, so that we see Nicolas Cage's skills.
He totally blasts the hotel guy with a shotgun before Nicolas Cage shoots him. That guy's on a rampage.
The way this scene works out is he goes, let me get these other papers. He closes the door. He gets a shotgun and he blasts it through the door, I guess using his Matt Murdock Daredevil radar sense to know where Nicolas Cage is. He opens the door. Nicolas Cage is gone. And it turns out Nicolas Cage has the amazing skill of moving out of the way of doors when there might be a shotgun blast behind it. And then the hotel owner walks in, the old man kills him, and then Nicolas Cage shoots and kills the old man. And we learn the old man was once the governor of Colorado and had dinner at the White House with President Donald Trump in a pretty...
Oh, wow, how the mighty have fallen.
Oh, boy, very much so. Donald Trump, we must assume, is wearing some kind of sackcloth and eating ashes in the desert, you know, as penance of some kind. We can only imagine, because the bigger they are, the harder they fall. He's a pretty big guy. I'm not trying to size shame him. He's taller than me. He's just kind of like there's a like an elephantine quality about Donald Trump. But anyway, we don't need to get into that because this is way in the future when that's all over. Don't. No.
So I can only assume that Nicolas Cage was behind the couch because he was looking for more receipts and then was surprised when shotguns started flaming.
I think so. Well, I don't know. I was going to try to quote Carol Kane song about it. You can't talk to a man with a shotgun in his hand. But then I briefly forgot the lyrics, so forget about that. Okay, guys. Nicolas Cage, as a result of his just top work shooting this old man, is getting a promotion. And he talks to this bald guy in his apartment who I can't tell if it's his boss or his partner or just another coworker. Their relationship seems to be kind of fluid. But Nicolas Cage, he sympathizes too much with the unproductive. He doesn't want to move them. And as he says to this bald man, whose name I think is Adam, but I wasn't really sure, he says...
I thought it was like Ben Westinghouse.
Oh, that could be it.
Named after, his family owns the patent on the refrigerators.
Oh, okay. So that's why he was able to survive and become a federal agent. So bald man is right off the top. You can tell he's going to be the bad guy. And that's why I'm going to spin him off into the movie Bald Man, and then I can have the sequel Bald Man versus Dark Man, where they finally fight. These two characters we wanted to see in conflict for so long. Dark Man, who has the power of fake faces, and Bald Man, who has the power of blinding you when light shines off of his dome. And that is that's the enemy of darkness. And we often think of darkness as bad, but in this case it's good, because Dark Man, he hides in the shadows for justice, and Bald Man, he shines the light of injustice in your eyes to blind you. So anyway,
I mean, the Darkness comic book is bad, but the Darkness band is pretty good. I mean, it's balanced out.
And Blinded by the Light is a different song that people don't realize is a Bruce Springsteen song, but it is.
There's almost no plot in this film, but we've spent 20 minutes talking about the first 5 minutes.
Okay, so Nicolas Cage mentions that he's seen children drink their own piss. I guess he was watching Waterworld Babies, starring little Kev Costner. And Nicolas Cage remembers the good old days when he was a kid and his mom used to take him to a lake and teach him fly fishing. And he is using a fly fishing rod in his apartment and hooks it onto the Monet on his wall, which, who cares? Society has collapsed. Who cares about how valuable a Monet is anymore? Okay, Nicholas, he goes to his next humanity that needs bureauizing. That's a mom named Rachel and her son Lucas. And Rachel has dressed Lucas up in new shoes that don't fit to make it look like they're successful. Nicolas Cage goes through their papers.
Which is fucking crazy, because later on this kid is climbing all over a roof wearing a brand new pair of Timberlands, man. Like, what?
Yeah, tell
me
about
it. Why you put him in those shitty dress shoes, man? Those Tims look awesome.
Nicolas Cage, he tells them they're going to have to relocate, and Rachel slaps him. But then Lucas is climbing up on that roof, putting a bird back in a nest that he keeps on a chimney. I couldn't quite understand what was going on. I guess there's a bird that lives in a nest on a chimney on the house. There's apparently enough food for this bird to get by, so why don't they just let the bird tell them how to not be a burden on society? Because you can't spell bird in without bird, right, Dan?
Well, not those exact letters, but yes.
Close enough, though, right?
Yeah, all right, I guess so. Now, I'm a little confused about the timeline here, because I feel like...
Dan, this is the future.
And that's why. Wait, we're in the future?
No.
Oh no,
we're in the future from the moment before.
Well, that's true. There was a scientist, I believe, who once said, I think it was his postulate that time keeps on slipping into the future.
Okay.
And also do. So that applies to this situation. But Dan, what did you not understand about the timeline?
It goes like this:
creation of the universe, single celled organisms, plants, amphibians, reptiles, mammals, people.
Okay.
Then question mark, like an Evite where you don't know how late the party's going to go.
And then Morlocks and Eli.
Eli. Just a guy named Eli and his Morlocks.
Eloy.
I would have said Eloy, but you know what? Maybe I'm wrong.
So I may have misunderstood things because I was frankly not paying full attention to the movie, but I feel like later on, don't we learn that by this time he has like learned the shocking truth of New Eden? Like he learns it like in between.
No, not yet.
Okay.
That is about to happen. Anyway, Nicolas Cage saves this boy by giving him CPR, which I guess heals the broken leg that he got from falling off a roof. And Nicolas Cage, this is the weirdest part of the movie for me. He's hanging out in their one room house while the mom gives Lucas, who is 11 years old, a bath in a big metal tub. And it's like, one, it's kind of weird for her to still be giving him a bath. He is almost an adolescent. And two, that it's even weirder that Nicolas Cage is watching this mom give this kid a bath. Like, the whole situation is weird. You know what? Family togetherness, you know, the family that bathes together stays together. But I think it's still weird. Like, when my son's 11, you better believe I'm not going to be washing him in a big tub. And you better damn well believe Nicolas Cage is not welcome to watch my 11-year-old son wash himself.
Oh, come on. He's Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I'm going to side with Dan on this one.
Okay. Outvoted. Nick, when my son's 11, come on by and watch him take a bath. The jury has spoken.
This is around the time where Nicolas Cage turns to the woman and he's like, why do you want to stay here? And I think it's pretty clear. They have this big ass house with a ton of stuff in it. Like, they have a whole fucking display of commemorative spoons. Like, if they're so poor, how do they have all this stuff? Are there stores still?
Why don't you sell those spoons?
Who's the set dresser for this movie who's like, well, we could make it look post-apocalyptic, or we could just use my friend's house.
Now, let's just say right now, we are not falling into the Fox News trap of saying, how can you be poor if you have stuff? Because poor people have TVs and refrigerators. They can't be that poor. Don't give them welfare. But it is true that they are supposed to be so destitute that the government wants to relocate them to a death camp, and yet they've got so many – I don't know where she got those new shoes. They should have had a line about, like, I had to trade – you know, my eggs for those shoes or something like that. You know, they really don't seem to be in that bad a shape. But maybe the standards in the future are just so high because the rich don't want to share, you know.
Yeah, and the idea of, like, it doesn't feel like there's a Walmart down the street that they're just going to buy their stuff.
Oh, no, they live in a blasted wasteland. They live on
They have, like, four different cookie jars on their counter.
That's true. There's a scene
later. This feels like a world that doesn't have cookies.
there's a scene later where the bad guy needs something that he saw get put in a cookie jar, but he's tied up and he's telling somebody, it's in the cookie jar. No, the other cookie jar. And it's like, yeah, good point. Why does this family have so many decorative cookie jars? Okay, so Nicolas Cage, he feels sympathy for this boy that he's watching get a bath. And he calls in, and he remembers fishing with his mom. And he calls in and says, let's delay their deportation. I'm going to look into the case. Baldy does not like that. He's already suspicious of Nicolas Cage. Now he's double suspicious. Nicolas Cage goes back to the big city, and he follows the clue that he got from the old man, which leads him to meet, like, this kind of rebel guy who in an elevator. And the rebel gives him a data chip that tells him the truth about New Eden. Now, we don't get to see it, but it's pretty clear that he's learning that they just kill the people that go to New
Eden.
But
what? So what about this old man with a shotgun at the beginning? Made, like, nothing about him he's part of a resistance.
He's so close to being a hobo with a shotgun, but not quite there.
There's nothing that would make me believe that this guy is part of a complicated resistance movement. He just seems like a poor old man down on his luck.
But maybe
that's all an act.
It could be a cover story. Although this seems to fall into the V for Vendetta trap of everyone in the movie is either a fascist or a rebel, and there's no regular people in between. The way in V for Vendetta, everyone openly disparages the fascist totalitarian government, seemingly without punishment. And yet no one ever puts two and two together and is like, oh, there's like four people who run the whole government and they have three policemen who work for them. Maybe we should just go and fire them and just take over. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like that. Everyone in the movie is either a bad guy or a rebel with nothing in between. Some of them are even rebels, which is like,
we'll get to that later.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And none of them, of course, are rabble, which is what the hamburger says.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he died long ago.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, what if there was a scene where they, like, found the hamburger's bones clutching what was left of a hamburger?
That would be very strange.
That's
the answer to your what if.
I guess that's true. You would go, what? I'm a sucker for post-apocalyptic stories where they stumble upon vestiges of civilization that they don't recognize but that we recognize.
Like Tom Petty in the Postman movie?
Or like the end of – he recognizes the Statue of Liberty, but the end of the Planet of the Apes, or like – there's a – there's all these movies where, or books more, where people are wandering through a post-apocalyptic world and they'll come across like the ruins of a New York landmark, mm-hmm. and the characters yeah. don't know what it is, but you know what it is. I love that stuff. So maybe they just find someone in a Hamburglar costume. They come across the radioactive what's left of a McDonald's play place, and they go, huh, yeah,
They come upon the feet of an Azar's big boy statue, and
it's just the like plaque reads,
yeah, gaze yeah. upon my big boy in despair.
Well, they find the statues at the McDonald's, and they see Mayor McCheese, and they go, ah, this was their leader, probably a war chief. And then they see Grimace, and they go, and this was their god. Interesting. Okay, so Nicolas Cage.
I mean, Mayor McCheese is a fucking puppet, right? We can all agree.
Oh, yeah.
He's a puppet for Ronald McDonald. Ronald's in charge.
Oh, yeah. Considering Ronald's the richest man in his town and it's named after him, I think the fact that it's called McDonald Land and not the People's Republic of Burgersvania or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ronald McDonald is very much the hand behind the puppet and the man behind the throne. Now, here's uh-huh. the thing. Who's the rebel in this scenario? Is it the bird with the flight cap? Or is
that's
it
Birdie?
Or really, you know what? Is it Hamburglar? Is he
yeah,
the rebel?
It's pretty clear.
And that's what he's saying. Rebel, rebel, not rabble, rabble. You know what, guys? Forget uh-huh. what I said. He is a rebel. He's the best of them all. Hamburglar, someday you'll be a hero, but not today. And there's going to be that moment where Hamburglar gives his life to remove the bomb from Gotham City, and they put a statue of him in Town Hall, and then his butler finds him alive in Italy. And at no point at no point does he go to Gotham and be like, oh, you can take that statue down. He's fine.
Wait, do you think that's his responsibility to be like,
yeah, should do that?
If you see something, say something, that? Dan. He saw a living Bruce Wayne. Say something. Take down that boondoggle of a bat statue.
But just because he didn't die, he doesn't deserve recognition for saving Gotham?
You know, because this opens up a world where Christian Bale decides to dress up as Batman, go over to Gotham, and just step in front of the statue and start selling his autograph and taking pictures in front of it. And that's not cool.
Okay.
Okay, mm-hmm. So Nicolas Cage, he goes to Lucas's recital. The official cover story is, I delayed their deportation so he could go to his recital at school that he's been training for. And Lucas's part is to literally recite the Pledge of Allegiance, and everyone Woof. Applauds him as if that's difficult, as if millions
stinker.
Of children don't do that every day. It is very stupid. This movie is very heavy-handed with its, like, America stuff. The people are like, this was supposed to be the United States of America. Look mm-hmm. what happened. That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Nicolas Cage gives Rachel a can of coffee, very rare. The next morning, Nicolas Cage, having stayed the night, but as a gentleman, he sleeps in his car. He does not take
I feel like this is a movie where cars are the only place people sleep.
Or car-shaped beds.
Yeah.
Or beds shaped like or cars shaped wait. Car-shaped bed. For a minute I thought I said a car shaped like a bed, which would be crazy.
It would be crazy because they haven't made new cars in years.
Exactly, yeah. So it's just a bed on wheels, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I guess is how the grandparents in the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory would get around. Just a bed on wheels.
Yep, when they participate in wacky races.
What a crossover. Finally, the worlds of Hanna-Barbera and Roald Dahl have combined. Okay, so the next morning, Baldi shows up. There's a big fight. Lucas shoots him in the eye with a BB gun or a rifle or something and knocks his eye right out of his head, leads to a very lackluster fist fight. And Rachel holds up Nicolas Cage's gun and shows she is totally incapable of handling it as she just shoots the walls up, loses control of it, and they escape just as the other Humanity Bureau agents arrive. Now, we get to my favorite little detail in the movie, which is that they have handcuffed Baldi, and he has to tell his sidekick Porter, give him the key, which is hidden in the aforementioned cookie jars. And they have, I don't know if so they must have done this as a little bit of frontier medicine. They have duct taped a piece of bread over his empty eye socket, I guess, because they don't have bandages in the future, but they do have bread. And it's such
which is weird because the whole point is they don't have bread, right?
Now, I guess that was maybe it's really moldy. I don't know. But it is such a funny visual. And it's the one movie where the one moment where it turns into like a Fury Road delicatessen Terry Gilliam type movie is just like, yep, that's what they use for bandages in the future. Just little pieces of bread duct taped to your face.
Partially eaten bread.
Partially. Nothing's better to put on an open wound, such as a missing eye, than a little piece of partially eaten bread.
Yeah, like it's, I love it.
It is such a weird scene. It's like he has bread taped to his face, and he's telling his assistant, no, the other cookie jar. And you're like, this is supposed to be funny, I assume, right?
Yeah. And then And then I think we cut to Westinghouse walking down an austere hallway back at the Humanity Bureau, and he's passing a janitor's cart and picks up a paint scraper that's just sitting there and uses it as a mirror to check out his new eye patch, which is crazy. Like, wouldn't he just go to his office to do that?
Or the bathroom. Do they not have bathrooms in the future with mirrors? Now, he is meeting with his superiors in a wet parking lot because I don't think they had access to the conference rooms at that particular building when they were shooting it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
They tell him that he has to stop Cross because they have to preserve the illusion of New Eden. And he shows them that the bad guy superior shows them these boxes of ashes. And he pulls something
out. This is a empty parking lot, but for one pallet of boxes.
Yes. And it's this box of ashes, and he pulls out and he goes, "What do you think this is? A piece of bone? A tooth?" And his assistant goes, maybe she's not his assistant. I just assumed because he's the one who's throwing the threats around, but maybe they're co-equals on this bad guy committee. She says, "I think it's a child's tooth." And he goes, "Yeah, a child's tooth. Anyway, you better stop him or you'll go to New Eden." And it was like, this movie is... That's a pretty crazy moment to be like, take a look at this kid's tooth. We killed this kid and burned him. The same thing will happen to you. And it just playing off the fact that Nicolas Cage earlier was like, "I've seen children drink their own piss." It's like this movie really is hitting the child card pretty hard.
Yeah.
This is also weird.
Evil president also threatens Baldy by saying, "Agent Noah Cross was your friend. A good friend, as good as friends get." And I don't think that's the case.
No, they don't seem to like each other. That's also not the way any person has ever talked in the history of the world.
I also don't know why, like, he has to have, like, these props for show and tell.
Since everybody already knows what New Eden is. I mean, because it makes it a cool scene, dude. And you know why? Because the tactile sensation of an object really can get a point across in a way that mere words don't always. Join me, won't you? In a little voyage into the world that I call proper communication. Hi, I'm Elliot Kalin. Would you like to be an effective communicator for both business, pleasure, or combined?
I didn't sign up for this.
We all would. No. And so the first rule of communication is object work. Use an object.
Did I buy a master class online that I don't know about?
Hit the back button. Hit the back button on the remote.
Preferably, preferred objects include dead children's teeth, cans of coffee, or too many cookie jars. Now, any of these can be used to get your point across. Lesson 2. Tell a tale. Facts don't stick in the human mind, but stories do. We're a people that love stories. Stories like the Humanity Bureau, in which, in the next scene, Nicolas Cage...
Okay, great.
He smashes his phone so they can't track him, and he demand. This is when our hero, Nicolas Cage, demands gasoline from a handicapped man at gunpoint.
Handicapped man really, like, turns his opinion around on Nicolas Cage, too. Like, he threatens this guy at gunpoint, like you say, and then, like, as Nicolas Cage is leaving, he's like, "Are you a good family man?" And Nicolas Cage is like, "I try to be." And this, like... creates a bond between them so strong that the gasoline man then crashes his truck into the
bad guy's car.
Bad guys.
You guys are being mean to Brian, the owner of Brian's Gas or whatever. Oh, like, okay. His name is written on the thing.
No, I prefer Brian gasoline man.
Carries around a crutch, but never leans on it at all. He uses it more as a prop, like Elliot was saying.
He doesn't seem to need the crutch. The crutch seems to be there more as a conversation starter.
But you would think, like, if he needed a crutch, maybe he could use it to lean over when he spits out his tobacco juice. Because most of the time, he's just spitting it on himself.
Yeah, that's the full character of this guy.
No.
He likes chewing tobacco.
Here's the characters. Here's the four things about him. He owns a gas station. He pretends he needs a crutch. He likes to chew tobacco. And every line he says is so hilariously portentous. He goes, he shows Nicolas Cage all this extra gasoline. He goes, "I was saving these for a rainy day. Something tells me a storm is coming." Like, everything he says, it seems like it was designed for the trailer. Like, this actor was like, "I'm going to be in the trailer for this movie. I'm going to rewrite all my dialogue." So it's just, like, super ominous. And then he crashes his tow truck into a bad guy car. I assume giving his life.
The sad, lonely end of Brian, the gas man. Yeah. Now, he smashes his car into, you would hope that he would smash it into the lead car of the pursuers. But in fact, he hits the second car, leading Westinghouse to look over his shoulder and say, "What the hell?" And that's it. Like, that is the entirety of Brian's eulogy.
That's what it says.
Like,
you'd
think they would stop their car and be like, "What is going on?" But in fact, what the hell? Let's just continue.
Put it on his tombstone.
Brian left the world as he entered it, making people go, "What the hell?" What is this? Who is this guy? Nicolas Cage bonds with Lucas over a lucky rabbit's foot that he gives to Lucas as a gift, and he says he plans to take them to the lake he used to go to as a kid, Jackfish Lake, which he has a postcard for, and Rachel doubted it exists. And this is kind of one of those things where it's like, I feel like we've seen this in other post-apocalyptic movies where someone has like a piece of memorabilia from a place that used to exist in the before times, in the old world, and they're trying to get to it. I'm having trouble thinking of a specific example off the top of my head, but
yeah, it looks like any location map in the Fallout series of games, basically.
Yeah, there you
go. And the that kind of like fake postcardy shit. And I think he's bonding with him while sitting on the prow of what, like a rowboat that's on like sitting in a like an old dead lake, like it's just desert. And yet there's a bunch of fish just lying around that look like they haven't been there that long.
Maybe the lake dried up like a day ago. It's a movie that seems to not have put a lot of thought into how long in the future it's supposed to be. Like everyone's like, oh, nobody remembers a world where there were lakes. But they were like, oh, we better show this was a dried up lake, so we'll put fish around. Not even like fish bones. Not even the band Fishbone, which would have been amazing to have them suddenly appear and put on a performance in the movie.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, who wouldn't love that? Okay, Baldi, he threatens the rebel who told Nicolas Cage about New Eden, and he says, I'm going to kill your family. And then it's like, psych, I already killed him. And we never hear about those characters ever again. Nicolas Cage gets stopped by a family of survivalists led by a German dad who has another one of these hilarious lines. He goes, what is your business here, stranger? And it's like, all right, is it medieval times all of a sudden?
Well, first I thought they're like getting into Canada, and I'm like, this is an interesting take on a Canadian accent.
Well, also, like, he feels the need to identify himself as German, too. Like, he actually says it explicitly, and it's just like, yeah, dude, we can hear you. I don't understand.
It's almost like they were like, people are going to wonder why he has this accent, so we better just call it out ahead of time. But it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. He tells them, he gives them a route north and a Geiger counter, while Lucas bonds with the guy's kids, who are kind of what, Reavers? Or they're kind of like a raiding family.
It's like Rufio and the gang.
Yeah, or like, what's that? Was that Captain Fantastic, the Viggo Mortensen movie? It's like, yeah, they're feral children who live out in the wildlands. So Baldi learns that Rachel is living under an assumed name. She stole the identity of her neighbor, who's dead. And he also shows off his exercise pool to his sidekick, Porter. Now, this is what meant to show that Baldi is so rich, because he's a, you know, a fascist government agent, that he can afford to live in a place that has a swimming pool. But I don't know if I should bring it up. There's an icky moment in there for me where he's like, Porter, you should, and Porter is black. And he goes, Porter, you should get in. And he goes, no, I would drown. And I'm like, are they not aware of the, like, there's a racist stereotype that black people can't swim? And so that's not cool, movie. Like, I mean, you probably don't know you're playing into that, but it's still a weird moment, and I didn't like it. And I thought this was a colorblind fascist totalitarian dystopia. And now I'm kind of weird, grossed out. It was like,
yeah, you're on board before. You're like, sure, New Eden, whatever.
Get rid of the birds. But now, hey, look, I'm a maker, not a taker. Get these leeches off of me. Let's go Galt, everybody. but it's also like, it shows, I guess, how unrealistic the movie is, that when they pull out a child's dead tooth, I was like, eh. But when they accidentally touch upon a racial stereotype, I was like, movie, that's too far. Maybe it's just what I expect from movies and don't expect from movies. I don't know. Says more about me. Well, I guess what I'm saying is this movie's a Rorschach test, in that it's not trapped in here with us. We're trapped in here with it.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
The true Rorschach test is whether or not you think Rorschach is the hero or possibly a villain of that story.
I guess so, yeah. Certainly an argument I had with a friend of mine when I was 15. So, Nicholas...
That friend, Zack Snyder.
Exactly. So... Nicolas Cage and the other guys, by which I mean Rachel and Lucas, they're in the car. Uh-oh, a drone is flying overhead. They have to bump, 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 sit in their car and wait for it to fly away. That's the next challenge on their quest. And they all really get on each other's nerves. And I'm like, oh, they are. This is one of those moments where I'm like, they are kind of becoming a real family, because they're all on each other's nerves on this long car trip. And Lucas is like, hey, my friend told me New Eden is a death camp. And Rachel is like, don't say that. Nicolas Cage is like, no, he's right, it is. And it's like, how big a secret is this if Lucas heard it from his friend at school? Like, come on.
Yeah, that's like finding out that after you beat Mike Tyson and Mike Tyson's punch out, there's a secret guy named Bray Trashman who throws trash at you. Like, I heard that in school. Like, there's no way that's a real secret.
Or if it turned out that they really did invent hoverboards that worked and parents did take them off the market because they were so dangerous. And you were like, how did kids get this secret information? I don't understand.
Yeah, those parents, I guess, are the same parents who lied about Freddy Krueger ever existing.
Yeah. You know, kids have ears everywhere.
Yeah, like on their heads, certainly.
Yeah, mostly on their heads, Dan. I can name a couple different parts of the body. No,
I've seen kids. They're just covered in ears. They're lousy with them.
Oh, that's gross.
And then Dan pulls down his pants to show us the ears on his butt.
Elliot, come on. I'm not a kid.
Oh, yeah, that's I'm sorry.
If he was a kid,
off.
He would have.
They dropped off. When you went through puberty, your vestigial ears fell off.
My baby ears.
Your baby
fell out.
Ears. You put them under your pillow, and the ear fairy comes along and gives you, I don't know what. What does the ear fairy give you?
Well, just a ball of wax. It's really gross.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I don't know why I put the ears under my pillow if I knew that was going to happen.
We're putting together a pretty good spec script for the next Channel Zero season.
there's a moment here where Rachel is like, so are you going to tell Lucas that you're his father and he's your son? And it's one of those things where you're like, I knew this was going to happen because I know how movies work. But there was nothing in the story that would have led me to believe this.
Yeah.
It just kind of comes out of nowhere unless you've seen a movie, in which case you know that's the case. And Nicolas Cage is like, oh, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. But it means that Nicolas Cage knew that Rachel was not really Rachel, despite – she doesn't even have the Rachel haircut. So like
– Oh, yeah.
He knows that – if anything, she looks more like a Monica.
Yeah.
A harmonica, if you will.
Oh, anyway, wow.
No.
No.
Isn't that what her dad, Elliot Gould, calls her?
Harmonica, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I'll allow
it. Hey, Friends fans, check out the Friends Wiki. Text me later whether or not I'm right. Promise not to be a creep like a Ross over here.
Wait, are you calling me a Ross?
I'm just saying Ross is the villain of Friends.
Yeah, okay. Ross is
if
the
there's
bad
a
guy.
Baddie, it's Ross.
Ross is very clearly the worst, most horrible character in Friends. Because he's a he's a jerk, but he thinks he's the hero.
Uh-huh.
And look,
and Gunter is there to warn us away from trusting in Ross.
What people don't realize is that Monkey is Ross's parole officer, who's there to keep him in line.
Weird.
Yeah. Oh, did you not know that the Friends live in the Zootopia world?
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They're the last humans in Zootopia, and the apartment. People are like, "How do they afford that apartment on a waitress's salary?" Because they're in a human zoo, dudes. She's not really a waitress.
Yeah,
they just put her in an environment that she feels comfortable in, where she would do human life-like activities, so she doesn't go crazy and chew off her own feet. You know, like an animal in a cage. So Ross is very much like just the bad guy. You know, but it's
right.
That. It's like that old saying: either die a hero or live long enough to become Ross. So Baldy, at this point. Lucas stops to use the bathroom, and Baldy attacks him in the bathroom, continuing our theme in the movie of Lucas having adults with him when he's either bathing or using the bathroom, when he shouldn't need to, really. He's old enough that he can do it on his own. He doesn't need a bad guy there. Turns into a firefight with federal agents. Lucas gets away from Baldy by stealing his fake eye, which I couldn't quite figure out how that happened. So he just took it from his pocket, which doesn't make any sense. It was like he stole it from his pocket, and Baldy was like, "My eye of power, I'm too weak to hold you now."
Yeah, and Westinghouse, when he loses his eye, he's like, "Hey, you little," and then the kid drops it down a fucking vent, and he's like, "I'll get it." And Westinghouse is like, "I guess I'll just stand here and wait for you to come back." And then, like, I'm sure it cuts to him a little bit later. He's like, "I don't think he's coming back."
And Lucas runs outside where Nicolas Cage almost backs his car into him in what was a pretty good stunt, in that it really did look like they almost hit that kid with the car.
Okay.
So Rachel
tells... I guess take our moments of joy when we can in this movie.
Look,
yeah, when Nicolas Cage defends his decision not to go with Lucas to the bathroom because, as he says, it was number two.
That's right.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I didn't even think about that.
Which means they had a conversation about it too. Like
Lucas was like,
"Should I come with you?" He's like, "No, it's number two." All right.
So does that mean I shouldn't come with you? And Lucas is like, "No, Agent Cross. If it's number one, sure. Number one, more's the fun. Everyone hangs out with me."
He's like, "I've heard about you, Agent Cross. You like watching kids drink their own piss. So if it was number one, you're coming in.
Number two, I don't need you." That's the just remember that rhyme and you'll always remember.
Yeah.
Okay. What about number three? the mythical number three. Well, 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 Noah Cross, I don't think you're ready for the secrets of number three. So Rachel tells Nicholas, hey, I was friends with the real Rachel, with Lucas's mom, and we had a fight because she wanted to sell Lucas, and then when he was a baby, and I said, no, he's too beautiful, don't sell him, and then I accidentally killed her. And that, or it's implied that she killed her accidentally in the fight. And Nicholas Cage is like, all right, okay. And they then drive through a radioactive zone. Uh-oh. Uh-huh. The Geiger counter says, actually, there's not that much radiation. It was a trick. They didn't want people going to this place for some reason that I don't
It's never made clear, like, why everyone thinks that this place is a radioactive zone and then, like, and then it's not. And, like, who's spreading this and, like, why there aren't more people in the non-radioactive zone. And it's like we mentioned it before. We just watched for the bonus episode Star Trek V with the Greatest Generation guys. And it's exactly like when they're going through the Great Barrier to find God at the end of the movie, and they're like, no one's ever gone through this barrier. And then they're just like, I guess we'll go through this barrier. And they do it just perfectly fine.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage has more trouble with his car driving than they have with the Enterprise going through the Great Barrier.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because it's like, I guess it's supposed to be like the government didn't want people to know about this place where there are still trees and snow because they'd know there's resources. But it's like the whole reason the Humanity Bureau exists is because there weren't enough resources. So if there were, why are we doing this? Like, what? Like, why are we doing this
thing?
Yeah, and it's
just
not like
bored.
It's not like the New Eden lie. Like, maybe running death camps, like, provides something for them. Like, it would make sense if they were eating them, because at least they're creating a resource. But otherwise, it's like, yeah, okay, run away. Then we don't have to take the time to turn you into ashes.
Well, the other thing is like, oh, if you live out in the wasteland, okay. Like, you're not getting any of our resources anyway. It's, I guess what I'm saying is they didn't put, they didn't put a lot of thought into the creation of this dystopia. They reach a heavily wooded forest. Uh-oh, Baldy and the federal agents, Westinghouse and the agents, they show up and catch on to them. And Westinghouse is like, give me the memory card with the proof about New Eden. And then he kills Rachel, kind of gratuitously, and he steals Lucas. And Nicolas Cage says, let the boy go. I'll give you the memory card if you let the boy go. And he does. He lets the boy go, and Nicolas Cage is like, run! Run into the trees, Lucas! Which is hilarious, because it's like, you know this kid's going to die, like, instantly, right? Like, how is he going to... You don't think he's going to become Mowgli all of a sudden? Like, he doesn't know how to live in the
forest.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe he read Hatchet as a kid and knows all about that shit.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a hatchet, Stuart. How is he going to survive without a hatchet?
Maybe he'll find one. I don't know.
Okay.
He knows a lot of Molly Hatchet songs. Would that help?
I don't know. Molly Hatchet, their album covers always sold me an unfair bill of goods there. Their album covers looked awesome, and their music was meh.
Now, here's the part where Westinghouse shows that he's not that dumb, is he's like, let me just check this memory card right here in front of Nicolas Cage. Hey, it's blank. You tricked me. And he just shoots Nicolas Cage in the head. Lucas runs back, and the feds are like, why did you come back? And a sniper takes out all the feds. Uh-oh. There were rebels in the forest that Lucas found. I guess he stumbled on them when they were, tapping trees for their maple syrup. I don't know.
Yeah, there's two questions here. Like, number one, why does Westinghouse, upon finding out that there's nothing on the thing, just shoot Nicolas Cage rather than be like, all right, where's the real information? And number two, like, those snipers came in a little late. You know, they could have shot them maybe before they killed Nicolas Cage and Rachel.
Yeah, but possible. I mean, they might have been like,
I don't know. Rachel's a murderer. I thought we already covered that.
Okay, so
true.
She killed Lucas's mom.
Harsh justice from Stewart.
the next scene is Lucas with the sniper and his female compatriot. It's not. I guess you're supposed to assume they're married. I don't know. In their ski lodge, they live in a very nicely appointed lobby of a hotel in Aspen. It's like, if this is what life is like outside the cities, then okay, great. Let's do it. Let's not live in the cities. Like, what? And they take Lucas in and they go, do you have any idea where the real memory card would be? Hey, guess what, guys? It's in the only object that the movie spent any time talking about, the rabbit's foot. Oh! Because sometimes in this world, you got to make your own luck. Always bet on black. Or in this case, Lucas. and they play the memory card, which has a message about New Eden from Noah Cross, where he just says, like, it's a death camp. Watch out. Don't believe him, blah, blah, blah. This message, and it's one of those things where it's like, so Noah Cross, instead of using the original memory card that was given to him, or maybe he recorded over it with his own message because he thought he was a better communicator. He took my course.
Yeah.
Why did he then not tell everybody along the way, oh yeah, New Eden's a death camp? Like, what was he waiting for? What moment was he waiting for with this?
I mean, not to get ahead of things, but like the next thing is they cut to like hilarious stock footage of riots.
Yeah.
To indicate that this message has gone through the world and like there's an uprising. But there's no indication that these rebels have any ability to broadcast this message to the world. Like, I don't know how that part of it happened.
I mean, I'm just going to assume, because they didn't tell me that's not how it happened. I'm going to assume it's the same way it happens in Johnny Mnemonic. And Henry Rollins and the other guys are just broadcasting it on some kind of pirate TV radio station, the symbol that you need to break out of the system, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like in Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure. Or They Live. They break into the local TV station.
Yeah,
and just,
yeah, yeah. Now you're getting it.
Or that rock and roll pirate radio movie that came out a couple years ago where it's like a offshore oil drilling rig that they turn into a radio station. Something like that. Maybe that's what it is. Anyway,
Or like in Airheads where they take over that radio station and play music.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone remembers Airheads.
I mean, of course you remember it. Comedy Central played it all the time.
They played it a lot. Look, that was the movie that forged the bond between Adam Sandler and Steve Buscemi that we are still reaping the benefits and rewards of today.
Guys, for some reason, I saw Airheads in the theater. I just want to confess that.
I mean, I get it. It was a good cast. You like Brendan Fraser.
Dan, yeah. I saw the Jerky Boys movie in the theater, okay? Only defense you need is that you were young at the time. Look.
Yeah.
What's funny about the Jerky Boys movie is that, like, I don't remember anything except the very end of it. So it's very possible that me and my friend got the showtimes wrong, got there late, saw the last 10 minutes of the movie, and then left. And we're like, that's enough. That's all we need. Either that or I blocked out the rest from my memory. I don't know. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, as Dan says, revolution breaks out because people are like, Nicolas Cage's word is all that I needed. And it's really funny because it's like, again, everybody seemed to know that this was the case. They just needed, like, someone to, I guess, pop the bubble. You know,
there's never a moment in the movie where we see any characters talking about New Eden in a way that's like, that isn't totally silly. Like every time, the only person who talks about New Eden positively, it's Nicolas Cage as he's about to send somebody there. Like at no point is there somebody who's like, yeah, you know, maybe New Eden makes sense for us.
Yeah. You'd think people would be
this is the movie Downsizing.
You think people would be applying for New Eden? Like that's,
yeah.
Yeah. It would be like the same way that, so spoiler alert for Sorry to Bother You, that in Sorry to Bother You, people want to go into these kind of slave prisons that have been set up by that one corporation so that they can have a home and meals. Like you know what, guys, we should have watched Sorry to Bother You. This is just a really good movie and The Humanity Bureau is not a good movie.
Okay.
So revolution breaks out. Free folk are streaming back into the city so that they can get on some of that Fed killing action. And dead Nicolas Cage in his last moments on Earth, which apparently stretched the months that it takes for this revolution to take place. He remembers swimming at the lake. Or maybe the whole thing is what Nicolas Cage is imagining in his last moments on Earth. We don't know. We don't care.
It's the fields of grain in Gladiator.
Yeah. Or fields of gold in Sting.
Nope. Nope. Nope.
All right. Well, after 11 years,
tired of this,
Stuart definitively shuts things down.
What, Stuart, can we compromise and say it's more of a Salisbury Hill scenario?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
A Salisbury steak scenario.
So that's the end of the movie. Nicolas Cage got them. Nicolas Cage should have been more focused on getting the message out instead of like helping this kid. And the old order returneth, I guess, or perhaps a new order that's better than the old arrives. Who cares? It's the Humanity Bureau. For the Flophouse, I've been Elliot Kalin. Back to you, Dan.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
No, that's not how we do it. We do final judgments. Was this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or movie kind of liked?
Yeah.
This ranks high up on the list of boring movies we've done.
And by high, you mean low, right?
Well, I mean, like on the list of most boring, it ranks high.
Because you know that on the DVD of the Humanity Bureau, it's just going to say ranks high, or ranks high on the list. Dan McCoy, The Flophouse.
Yeah. As I said at the beginning, there's nothing distinctive about this story at all. We've seen it all before. It's all very predictable. There's no reason Nicolas Cage would have made this movie other than to fund his castles. Like, mm-hmm. I can't see any other name actor reading the script and being like, yeah, yeah, this seems good.
I mean, Eric Roberts would probably be into it.
Okay.
I mean, ironically, Nicolas Cage is making the Humanity Bureau, so I guess I assume so he can pay back the IRS, the money he owes them. So maybe he's like, oh, I'm finally going to stick it to him. This is really going to say something about how the government takes advantage of people. And it's like, Nick, you didn't do proper accounting. I mean, that's part of the problem. As much as I respect you as an artist.
You know, I kind of enjoyed the first act of this movie. It's really silly, and that guy has bread taped to his face, and everybody goes out of their way to say how pretty the female lead in the movie is, which is really strange.
Yeah. It is weird that people the only quality she has that anyone remarks upon ever is that she's pretty, and it's presented as if the movie thinks that it has to keep reminding us, which is weird.
Yeah. It's like the way in XXX3, everybody has to keep telling us how cool Xander Cage is. Yeah.
Well,
because if we don't hear it once every 10 minutes, we will completely forget.
Well, they didn't make this explicit, but in this dystopia, there are no pretty women anymore.
Oh.
Okay.
So this is, So
you're saying the movie Pretty Woman has been banned because it reminds people of a world gone by.
Yeah. That sounds like a big mistake. Huge.
Stuart, you saying that makes me so glad I went with a Pretty Woman movie reference and not a reference to the song Pretty Women from Sweeney Todd.
This is a bad movie. Don't watch it.
It's a bad movie. It's worth watching, like Stuart said, the very beginning just to see how bad the car driving effects are. But but don't watch it. It's very boring. It's not, if you want to have fun watching a Nicolas Cage cash grab, there's much better options for you.
Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a new comedy podcast, why not try the Beef and Dairy Network? It won Best Comedy at the British Podcast Awards in 2017 and 2018. Also, ILO.
There were no horses in this country until the mid to late 60s.
Specialist bovine arse vet.
Both of his eyes are squid's eyes.
Yogurt buffet.
She was married to a bacon farmer who saved her life.
Farm-raised snow leopard.
True. Download it today. That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast from MaximumFun.org. Also, maybe start at episode 1 or, weirdly, episode 36, which for some reason requires no knowledge of the rest of the show.
Hey, gang. This is Jesse, and I am joined by Bikram, the managing director of Maximum Fun.
Hi, everyone.
So we have some really amazing news to close out 2018. After this spring's pledge drive, we gave members the chance to buy enamel pins with the full profits of those sales going to the National Immigration Law Center.
This is a tough time to be an immigrant in the United States. As individuals, as a company, and as a community, we wanted to help provide resources for immigrants in the face of these attacks.
We're proud to live in a nation of immigrants, and many of us here at Max Fun are immigrants or the children of immigrants ourselves.
Together, we raised over $100,000.
NILC will put that money to good use, providing legal representation to immigrants and their families who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it.
We are so proud of our community for making such an immense difference in so many lives.
And whether you bought pins or not, you can help the NILC advocate for immigrants right now. All you have to do is go to MaximumFun.org/NILC. That's MaximumFun.org/NILC. NILC.
Our thanks go to all of you who made this possible.
Great work, everybody, and happy holidays from all of us at Max Fun.
Yeah.
That's the classic pause and yeah, as Dan switches gears audibly into the next section of the show.
Sorry. I just got texted something funny, which I saw as I was going into my phone to do ads and letters.
The professional.
Funny text.
Funny text. Was it some kind of funny GIF?
Someone doctored a photo of me and sent it to me. So just imagine that.
I hope that friend is listening to the podcast and feels good about themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Ads.
Sure. Yeah.
Everyone loves them. Let's do some.
Let's keep the lights on. Yeah.
They certainly do.
The Flophouse is supported by ButcherBox. ButcherBox delivers healthy, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef, free-range organic chicken, and heritage-bred pork. ButcherBox is committed to raising animals humanely and free of antibiotics and hormones. Each box comes with at least 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individually sized meals. 24 meals, guys, from one box.
That's a great box-to-meal ratio.
Can you imagine it? It's like the loaves and the fishes.
I can't imagine it for reasons I'll explain after Dan finishes.
Okay. You can choose from 5 different box types. All beef, beef and chicken, beef and pork, mixed box, or a custom box, which let you choose your own cuts. Meat is frozen at the peak of freshness in individual vacuum-packed, biodegradable packaging. Hey, think of ButcherBox as your neighborhood butcher, delivered right to your
door. In a box.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. On dry ice with free shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states.
It's a real midnight meat train.
Yeah. For free bacon and $20 off your first box, go to butcherbox.com/flop and enter code FLOP. That's butcherbox.com/flop, code FLOP, for free bacon and $20 off your first box.
Have y'all been eating a lot of meat lately, right?
I certainly ate the bacon. I haven't gotten to the beef yet.
Let me tell you something. Let me testify to this. So, you know I love meat, perhaps too much, like Quinn Cannon in that one Preacher storyline. But I love meat. And so I was very excited to get a butcher box in the mail. It was a ton of meat. I was so surprised. It was a lot. And it was really good. Now my family has eaten through most of it. I got to fry up some bacon for my son, and we really bonded over this father-son bacon moment. We were cheersing each other with our bacon strips. And there was really high-quality ground beef in there that we made hamburgers out of. There was really high-quality chicken in there that we ate. You don't need to know how we eat our chicken. We do it a couple different ways. And it was... A couple other things, too, that we haven't even gotten to yet because there was so much meat in it, and it all tasted really good. And look, I love meat. I got high standards for meat, and ButcherBox exceeded those standards in a box at my door with dry ice, which is always fun because then you can pretend you're in a mad scientist laboratory.
So here's an ad for the vegetarians in the audience, and it's about contacts. Support for the Flophouse comes in part from Simple Contacts, a convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder contacts from anywhere in minutes. Need to renew your prescription? Take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. Have an unexpired prescription? Mm-hmm. Just upload a photo or your doctor's information and order your lenses. Now, Simple Contacts wants you to know this isn't a replacement for your periodic full health eye exam.
Okay.
Now,
you guys are eyeglass wearers and contacts havers.
You better believe it. My eyes are garbage. I can't see crap without lenses of some kind. So this is exciting to me because I've been thinking about – I used to wear contacts, and it just became a real hassle. It was hard for me to keep up reordering them. And finally, I was like, forget it. I'll just wear one pair of glasses all the time and look like a total nerdzo dorkville instead of the totally cool guy with super perfect vision that I appeared to be when I had contact lenses on. Now then,
you were so radical back then.
I was so radical.
And now that you're in L.A., L.A. is such like a appearance-based culture, right? You just want to blend in with all the young stars.
The minute I walk into a meeting, they see I'm wearing glasses and they say, no, thank you. Please turn away. And
like a writer wearing glasses.
Well, I never. And their monocle falls out of their eye, which I think is a little hypocritical that they wear monocles, but they're against glasses. Now, when I met my now wife, when we were first dating, I was wearing contact lenses. If I was wearing glasses at the time—
You were basically lying to her.
I was giving her the lie that my genetic code included good eyesight so that she would marry me so that when we had children— they would have good eyesight in their genes. Luckily,
it was a lot like a Molly Hatchet album cover.
Yeah, exactly. Without contact lenses, she might have known that I was carrying flawed vision genes. She might have said no, thank you, and the date would have been over right from the beginning. So, contact lenses—they're important, and anything that makes it that much easier to keep getting them and not run out is great.
Yeah. Hey. Get $20 off your contacts order at simplecontacts.com/flop or just enter code FLOP at checkout. So that's a little deal for you.
Okay.
Oh, thank
listeners.
You. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. For anyone who uses it. Yeah.
Steals and deals.
I mean, don't steal. Please don't actually steal the things.
I believe each of you has a Jumbotron to read. Does anyone want to go first?
Let me pull up this bad boy.
You want me to go first while you're pulling yours up?
Hell no, I am already.
Okay.
This message is for Graham. The message is from Matthew Hain. Dear Graham, it's me, Sludge. Surprise, biatch. I know that it's been an incredibly tough year. First with your diagnosis, and then your heartache. So I want to say what an honor it is to be pals with you. You were a true friend when Mum died and things got rough. Thanks for all the beers, yelling, Van Persies, and Flophouse sessions. Much love, Matt.
That was very sweet.
That was very sweet, aside from the biatch in there.
Yeah, I'm sorry for whatever bad times the recipient has gone through. I hope that this your friend's Jumbotron salves the wounds a little.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I didn't read it too sassy. Mm-hmm. You can just write in and let me know.
I'll use the desassifying filter.
That comes with this program, right? A desassifizer.
Wow.
I had trouble pronouncing it because it's a word that doesn't exist. Hey, I've got a Jumbotron too. It's made up out of real words, so hopefully I'll read a little better. This message is for Aaron, and it's from Jacob. This message is, congrats on your PhD, Aaron. Congratulations. It's been wonderful working with you, and I am so excited to see where you will go in the future. Your intelligence and helpfulness is a real inspiration, as is your ability to skip leg day and yet somehow out-squat the entire lab. So this guy's got brains and brawn. That's amazing. I am so grateful for your thoughtful mentorship, as well as for turning me on to the flop. So another very sweet message. That's from Jacob for Aaron.
Yeah, and if you want to get on the Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Mm-hmm. People can hear about your squats.
Yeah.
I've been looking for a way to inform more people about my squats.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take some letters.
Wait, before before we do that, look. We've still got a show coming up at the end of January, and I just want to talk about it for a moment. We're going to be doing a show live at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in beautiful Wisconsin. That's right, my grandma's alma mater and my sister's alma mater. I got Badgers in my family, and I'm very proud to be entertaining some Badgers at the U of WM. That's going to be Saturday, January 26th, 2019, the future. But it's going to be here before we think. Robots and Hovercrafts 2019. That's at 8 p.m. Saturday, January 26th at the Wisconsin Union Theater, Shannon Hall, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Tickets are available online. It's a very complicated URL, so just do a Google search for Flophouse, University of Wisconsin. It'll come up. And student tickets.
That's the last Flophouse show ever. Currently scheduled.
It's the last one currently scheduled.
We will do more.
I haven't talked to you guys off air about this, but our agent did get back to us with some options.
Glad we're throwing that in this episode.
Wonderful. Shows. Student tickets, only $10 to the Flophouse show, January 26th, University of Wisconsin-Madison. Should we say what movie we're doing?
Yeah, do it right now, Dan.
Are we sure? I mean, we're sure it's going to be available, right?
I think so. If it is available for us to watch, we will be doing Venom. Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. My favorite Marvel character, circa age 13, finally in his own movie and starring Tom Hardy. How could it go wrong? This is going to be
a critical financial success, Venom.
Yep,
I mean, it was a huge financial success.
It was a big success, and some critics liked it. Will we feel the same way? Let's find out on the Flophouse Live, Saturday, January 26th. It's Venom time. University of Wisconsin-Madison. Get your tickets now.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do letters. I said it before. I'll say it again.
Uh-huh.
Now it's for real.
Okay.
This time.
Okay. Now and forever. Cats at the Winter Garden.
This first letter is from Sebastian.
A crab.
Last name withheld.
Okay.
Okay. Sure.
Now, he writes, Dan, normally.
Do it in the voice.
Uh-huh.
Normally, I would sing a calypso type song about the letters under the C, the letter C.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, but we've had enough of my jabbering. Let's get on to that letter. Just imagine that song at home, everybody.
Okay.
Because I think it would go a little something like this: the letter C, the letter C. It's a letter in the alphabet, along with all the other letters. The letter C, and so forth.
Okay. So this letter from Sebastian goes like this. Isn't it weird that both Unbreakable and National Lampoon's Animal House both end with postscripts? I don't know. They're just such different movies that it's weird that both Harold Ramis and M. Night Shyamalan both decided to include these in their scripts. Is there a movie you three have flopped that you wish included a postscript at the end to inform you about what happened to a character after the credits have rolled? Yours in flop, Sebastian.
Well, I think the text at the end of Unbreakable was mainly there to maintain the absolute last moment twist reveal.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't actually have to have the movie go, like, they want people to be like, what? And then immediately leave the theater.
Yeah.
Which is what, clear it out for the next showing.
That was, it reminds me of when I first saw the trailer for Unbreakable, and the moment you saw Samuel Jackson's haircut for the first time, everyone in the theater erupted in laughter. So I kind of wondered at the end of the Humanity Bureau, I want to know what's going to happen to Lucas a little bit. Give me a postscript. Is he become the president of this new world, like a child king? I don't understand, but yeah. I wanted to know.
What about something like Stand By Me, where you have a bunch of kids getting in troubles?
Uh-huh.
I mean, well, you do find out what there is a postscript in Stand
Wait,
By Me.
Wait, what happens?
You're like, they all live long lives. None of them go to Vietnam, right?
This question requires me to remember movies that we've done, which is a real problem.
Oh, yeah. Are we talking about movies we've done?
No, it could be. Yeah. Oh, yeah, any movie that we have flopped. I'm going to say Humanity Bureau. I'm going to take the easiest one that I remember because okay. We did it already. And I'll say this. I can tell you a movie that we didn't flop that I wish did not have a postscript at the end. It's called The Imitation Game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I did not need to be reminded that we call those thinking machines computers.
Yeah, this thinking machine would grow up and one day be called a computer.
It was almost like, I wish it said, it came up on screen, says, the text says, today we call them computers. And then another text comes that says, you idiots. So what's
Academy Academy Award nominated film, The Imitation Game.
Yep. For writing. But what about, like, if there's a postscript to the end of Food Fight, tell us what happened to all those characters. Like, what's going to happen to Larry Miller's elderly, out and proud Batman?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan.
Well, I assume that because of the Supreme Court ruling allowing gay marriage, he gets married to his longtime paramour, Mr. Clean.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I can see that. That would be very sweet.
And that would mean Mr. Clean, the people who own Mr. Clean would pay more money for Food Fight 2.
Oh, yeah, finally.
More than the $2 I assume they paid for the first time
was
around.
Was he in Food Fight?
Oh,
I don't remember it at all.
Mr. Clean's walking around in there, which Mr. Clean is not a food product, so it's a little weird that he's in there. But
In fact, I would encourage you not to eat it.
Yeah, let's put that in the Tide Pod category of looks delicious, but don't put it in your mouth.
I gotta apologize to our listeners because I don't remember most of the movies we watch. Big surprise, and can't really answer this question.
That's okay. No,
we came up with some bullshit.
And I'm gonna nitpick a little bit and say that Dan earlier when he said Supreme Court decision allowing gay marriage, I want to change that to
upholding,
recognizing the right of gay marriage.
Yeah. Well. Okay.
It's not like the Supreme Court was like, I'll allow it. The Supreme Court came around and was like, oh, yeah, this is a human right, and we shouldn't deny it from you any longer.
Yes, you're right. I'm a bigot who purposefully misphrased.
No. I'm just trying to save your bacon. Bacon you can get from ButcherBox if you use our code.
Yeah. All right. This next letter is from Amos, last name withheld.
And Andy.
Oh, racist. Oh, boy.
Wow, are really stepping in it a lot today.
Wasn't Nicolas Cage in that movie?
He was in Amos and Andrew.
Oh, my mistake.
They're like, Amos and Andy live in Florida. We're Amos and Andrew.
Yeah.
He writes.
Wait, I've never seen Amos and Andrew. Is it based on Amos and Andy that the radio and television?
No, they were just going off of the name recognition, I guess, of that racist radio
it
show.
It seems really weird.
It's a bad choice all around.
It's like, oh, we wanted to do this. It's we're doing this movie. It's called Birth of a Ration. It's a comedy about rationing. Wait, so it's it's about the Klan? No, why would you think that?
Yeah.
Amos and Andrew seems like a weird name for that. So what's it about? Yeah. Is it an action movie?
It It's like a buddy comedy of some kind. I don't know.
Is
I saw
like
it on
the
TV
Fox and
way,
the Hound?
Way back when.
Is it like Milo and Otis?
It's like Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey.
Oh, okay. So it is like Milo and Otis.
Yeah. Amos writes, I was listening to an old episode, your review of the last Taylor Lautner video, vehicle abduction. Not like a VHS tape.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Not just the video he put out on Twitter for his fans, being like, this is Taylor, much love to everybody.
Yeah.
Let's keep it loud.
In that episode, Elliot said the movie would have been better if it had taken a sudden turn and Taylor Lautner had brought the statues in the Pittsburgh Pirates Stadium to life to fight the villains.
Yep, mm-hmm. I stand by that.
Yep.
It reminded me of a movie I saw earlier this year, Sorry to Bother You, mm-hmm. which, spoiler alert, takes time, kind of a crazy turn in its last half. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever enjoyed a movie that completely changed tone and went wacky toward the end? Best regards, and keep on flopping in the free world. Amos, last name withheld.
I mean, I think my favorite movie that kind of turns into a comedy in the last half is, of course, Takeshi Miike's Audition.
Yeah,
yes, side-splittingly wacky at the end.
That's another movie I'd like to see post-credits for.
Oh, yeah. I can't hear someone say, dee-ka-dee-ka-dee-ka-dee-ka-dee, without bursting into laughter.
Yeah, I feel like most sort of gear shift movies like shift gears into something serious at the end rather than wacky.
But you could like say, you could say that it's not the end necessarily, but you could say Gremlins 2 does exactly this, that it starts off as a kind of pretty straightforward, aside from the part with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck are arguing with each other at the beginning, it starts off as a pretty straightforward Gremlins type movie and then gets crazy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've talked about Gremlins 2, I think, on this podcast before. I love it. It was a very formative experience for me seeing it. So, like, that's an example, kind of. But it goes wacky, like, a third of the way into the movie, I think.
And obviously, From Dusk Till Dawn, like, starts off as a fairly serious crime film and then turns into a wacky vampire comedy.
It gets mm-hmm. very silly.
Yeah, but, like,
I had a person at the bar arguing with me that From Dusk Till Dawn had zombies in it. And I was like, no, 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 I assure you, it's vampires. I don't know many things in this world.
Yeah. But like most of the examples I can think of are things like Something Wild, where it starts off as kind of a lighthearted romp and then like it gets sort of serious at the end.
Yeah, like to draw you in, right? To get
yeah.
You know,
yeah, and they drop the other shoe. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a movie that I did not like, but I would have liked it more if it was more like The Wacky Ending that we watched for the Flophouse. That movie, The Cobbler, with Adam Sandler,
uh-huh.
where
uh-huh.
it is not a good movie. And then at the very end, suddenly it's about a father and son cobbler team that is in a secret spy war with, dry cleaners? And they end up having a secret hideout underground that with a supercar in it. And it was like, wait, where was this movie the whole time? Like, why couldn't it have been this movie? Why did I watch a movie where Adam Sandler gets in disguise as his dad to have sex with his senile mother when mm-hmm. I could have been watching this movie about spies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why indeed? Last letter from Leo, last name withheld, who
Leo Gorsi from the Bowery Boys, aka the Dead End Kids.
Ahoy, ahoy, original peaches. I'll get the sad stuff out of the way first. In the last year, both my father and future father-in-law passed away unexpectedly. The day that my father went into the hospital, my close friend's dad died of cancer. Also, I broke my toe. An avid podcast listener, I decidedly turned away from any media that wasn't abundantly joyful, which led me to the Flophouse. For a solid 6 months, you guys were the only cast I could hold close to my heart. It was nice to find myself weeping from laughter rather than grief. This is always very nice to hear. So I,
yeah, that is very nice. I mean, it's not nice to hear that people have lost loved ones.
No, definitely.
Let's
clarify.
Let's just clean up Dan's language a little bit. But it is nice to hear that we have helped someone through a hard time.
Dan's
like,
weird that
this is always
Dan's
nice
not even... Dan's not even speaking off the cuff. This is a prepared statement. Yeah,
it is always nice to hear that the human population has been lessened, as Malthus warned us it must inevitably do. Dan, please. No, but it is very heartwarming to know that
I just read what's in the teleprompter.
It's nice to know that we have helped someone in some strange way.
But Leo goes on to write, on an unrelated note, I've peddled the phrase boner police around my social circles for several years, trying to find a home befitting its glory.
This is the kind of shift we were just talking about. where it started very serious and has become quite wacky.
Who are the boner police? Are they law enforcement perpetually edging themselves from the thrill? Oh. Do they haunt illegal boners in a dystopic gun-cotta-riddled future?
Uh-huh.
I never solved the riddle, but on a recent episode, Stewballs dropped this phrase so perfectly. Mm-hmm. I should have known that some pursuits are best left to the masters.
Mm-hmm.
So, Stu, yeah, can I mean, this us about boner police?
Yeah,
I think this letter about boner police brings up an important point about the Humanity Bureau, and that's if they wanted, like, if they were going to be so rote, and by that I mean a movie written by people,
okay,
that they should have just cribbed from Equilibrium a little bit more, a movie that does exactly what Humanity Bureau is trying to do, but better, because it has gun kata in it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. This has been my prepared statement.
Okay. I mean, I had less about boner police than I expected.
Now you plead the fifth. Well, Stuart, as Stuart's lawyer, I'm going to advise him to take the Fifth Amendment when it comes to boner police on the grounds that what he says about boner police might incriminate him in activities that the boner police would like to look into.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Now, are the boner police, are they always getting into, now, are they getting into jurisdiction dust-ups with the Female Body Inspector Bureau, or is it just like?
Oh, all the time.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah. Now, what about?
But I feel like less said's the better. I think my dumb mouth's already getting me into trouble today. So let's move along. What's the next part of this podcast, Dan?
Okay. Well, at Stuart's bequest or request, I guess.
No. Stuart has left us, and now he's bequested us with this ending.
Yeah, I mean that's my last gasp. I ask you to do something different on the podcast.
Well, it was his last wish, so we should honor it.
especially this is especially tasteless misspeaking after the last letter, too.
Yeah. Now's the time on the podcast where we recommend movies you definitely should watch instead of the Humanity Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched yesterday. I went out and in the theaters.
Okay.
On the big screen.
What theater was it?
It was the Alamo Drafthouse in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh. Okay.
What do you watch?
I saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, Dan's the number one Spider-Man fan here at the Flophouse.
Oh, making me so mad. This movie. I want to see that movie and I can't.
I haven't had the time to see it. It's really fun, guys.
And it's got our boy in it.
Which boy is that?
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you want to see a good Nick Cage movie this Cagemas season, go out and see Into the Spider-Verse. I don't know like what else to say about it. I mean, like it's packed with story and fun and jokes and in-jokes and like heartfelt feeling. It's just a movie that you're surprised at how much stuff they can get into a movie watching this film. And it all works really well. And at the end of the movie, it turns into like a crazy psychedelic light show with the beautiful animation.
Spoiler alert.
Fun too.
Spoiler alert,
yeah.
Dan.
Yeah, that's great. Dan, everybody at listening at home, Dan's currently wearing a pair of those hard to get Miles Morales Nike sneakers.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Well, Dan's a real shoe collector. He loves it.
I am a shoe collector.
Yeah, yeah.
You say that as a joke, but I have so many shoes.
Yeah, he's got a huge collection of Jordans all wrapped up in cellophane.
I mean, they're not I'm not a sneaker collector, but I
Yeah, and you love the comic strip shoe. About the conservative
that's right,
duck.
About the cranky.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Mallard Fillmore. The cranky reporter bird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the most inexplicable comics on the comics page. And
now,
that's saying a lot.
Is it more or less inexplicable than Funky Winkerbean?
I mean, the thing about Funky Winkerbean.
Is that it's the
Elliot,
absolute funniest comic Dan's ever read.
They should call it Funny Winkerbean, right?
Is that... Mm-hmm. For a Winkerbean,
what?
He's not that funky.
Whoa. Can someone call the boner police to deal with this Winkerbean problem?
All right.
No, but for a Winkerbean, you're saying he's not particularly funky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the.
I think they put the cart
I'm imagining
the
a world
on
now
that one.
Where Funky Winkerbean is so popular that they do a porn parody of it.
Oh,
called
no.
Funky Winkerbean.
Yeah.
I mean, it might exist. Who knows? It's particularly for band teachers who want to watch some pornography.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing about Funky Winkerbean. When I was a kid, I would read the Sunday comics, but I didn't always read the daily comics. And so I'd be like, Garfield, hilarious. Peanuts, I love it. Funny and heartbreaking. Like, This Far Side, hilarious. And then I get to Fuggy mm-hmm. Wickerbean and be like, okay, here's one panel of a character dying. I don't, how am I supposed to take this right now?
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, we've grown to love those characters so much over the years.
All those famous characters, like the guy with the glasses, of course, mm-hmm. Funky Winkerbean, who seemed to never actually be in the strip, the band teacher.
Yeah, I think the guy in the glasses was the band teacher. So we've managed to name two characters.
Guys, is that the comic strip with Bill the Cat where he's always saying "ack"?
No, that's Bloom County
or Outland. I guess it's also known.
Do you think that Bill the Cat and Kathy get mad at each other because they both have the same catchphrase?
Yeah, they got into a big intellectual property battle over that. It was Cat v. Kathy, and they went all the way to the Supreme Court.
And who did they rule in favor of?
Mm-hmm. They declined to hear it.
Oh, so it didn't go all the way to the Supreme Court.
And then, they went up to the federal level.
Yeah, and then Croc threw them both in jail.
Croc.
Yeah, he's like a...
No, I remember Croc.
He's like a prison warden, right?
I mean, the thing is, Bill the Cat had a lot of nuisance lawsuits that he was filing because there was also Cat v. Cap, his lawsuit against mm-hmm. Andy Cap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About cheese fries. Yeah, anyway,
who invented and owned the cheese fries trademark?
Someone else go.
Okay, I'm gonna recommend a movie that I have to throw a big old caveat in front.
Okay,
caviar, delicious.
Yep, it's directed by a buddy of mine.
Okay,
it is the movie Leprechaun Returns, the latest Leprechaun movie that acts as a sequel to the original Leprechaun movie, kind of in that like reboot. Sequel
like,
type thing.
Like the most recent Halloween.
Kind of like the most recent Halloween.
Ignore all the sequels.
Or like Superman Returns, where it was like, this is a sequel to Superman 2.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's exactly like that. And, Dan, real quick, can you type in your address into my phone so my wife can find me?
This episode's really getting a lot of outside world interruption. Do you want me to talk?
But don't say it out loud because then people will know where we're currently at. So I'm going to recommend Leprechaun Returns. It's a fun little Leprechaun movie. It seems to understand that, Leprechaun is basically if you...
Wait, Stuart, I have a question.
Yep.
If you don't know my address, how did you get here?
Well, I didn't type your address in because I'm trying to do this fucking thing podcast.
So I see.
I can't do.
You're
both
just delegating.
At the same time. Yeah,
I'm delegating. Work. You're yeah. not. It's not that you didn't know my address. Okay.
So
Stuart went into a trance, and he asked his spirit animal, Spuds McKenzie, where to find you.
I mean, I prefer Patronus, but that's okay. Leprechaun Returns. It's basically, Leprechaun is basically if you just take Freddy Krueger and only keep the like funny goofy parts, right? So it manages to be pretty fun. Not all the jokes land, but there's a lot of them. The special effects are great. It's directed by Steven Kostansky, who directed Manborg and The Void, two movies I like quite a bit. And it looks better than you'd expect. It's just, it's fun. Leprechaun Returns. And like the fucking leprechaun rides around on a drone for a while and a dude gets his head chopped off. It's wild.
Sounds... fantastic.
Delivers those leprechaun thrills. I like The Void a lot, too. Maybe I'll check it out with my limited movie watching time. Hey, guys, but I watched a movie, too. Let me tell you about it. I watched a movie I liked called Summer 1993. Now, I know what you're mm-hmm. thinking. This is a movie about the release of Jurassic Park. I wish. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. That's not what it's about. It's a Spanish movie from last year, written and directed by Carla Simón, and it's about a young girl whose mother passes away, and so she has to go live with her aunt and uncle and their daughter, who was a little bit younger than her. And it's a movie that's about someone, like basically a kid trying to figure out what her life is like and what world she is in now that the things that she knows and is used to have gone away. And the performance by the lead girl is really, really great. And the story is told less in kind of like straightforward one after another scenes and more in kind of like moments that this kid is going through. And it feels like they capture really well kind of like a child's perspective on the world, on the events going on. It really reminded me of what it was like to be like a 10-year-old kid trying to make sense of like what adults are doing at any given point, like why certain things are okay and certain things are not okay. And I just thought it was really good. So that's Summer 1993. But watch out.
It's not about Jurassic Park.
It's not about Jurassic Park, and it's not in English. So get ready to read some subtitles. But I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I mean, if you're one of those folks who wants to watch a movie and not read a book, maybe you shouldn't go see it.
Yeah. Okay. That kind of petered out at the end.
I mean, it's less reading than a book, certainly.
I don't know what kind of books you read, dude.
I mean, it's more reading than Horse Meets Dog.
Hey, wow. Horse Meets Dog. It is, that's true, but that's a children's picture book that's in stores now. It's a bestseller at the Reader's Bookstore in Sonoma, California. And it is, you know, it's just a fun book about a horse and a dog. I wrote it. The great Tim Miller drew it. It's on shelves now. Why not get one for the child in your life or the person who's young at heart in your life? Or just buy it. I don't care who you give it to. Just like send it to a prisoner. I don't know. Throw it in the ocean. Like, as long as you pay for it, it's yours. You own it. Do what you want with it. I hope you read it. But like, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to do with it. Just pay for it and buy it and own it.
Strangely libertarian ending of that message. Elliot, why don't you rip off that John Stewart quote on the front and add Dan's quote, less reading than a movie with subtitles.
You're right. I think that'll get more people interested than the one by John Stewart that calls the book delightful. So I'll think about it. Horse Meets Dog, on shelves now, Summer 1993. I watched it on the Canopy app, but it's available other places too.
Before we go, we should always remind you that there are a lot of great shows over at MaximumFun.org, our podcast network.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to spread the word about the Flophouse, write us a review on iTunes or tweet about us with, you know, a hashtag, an appropriate hashtag.
Let's
probably
the
Flophouse Podcast Flophouse Podcast.
Let's use hashtag Flophouse Podcast. And all right.
Tell people about it. You could be at the gym and somebody's like asking why you're cracking up and you're like, because I'm listening to this super funny podcast, buddy. And he's like, okay, let's keep working out.
Yeah. And if you see one of us walking around, feel free to come up and tell us you like the podcast. You know, that's not the same thing, but it feels nice. I was at a place just this past weekend with my with my father-in-law and my son while the ladies were off having a baby shower. And and a guy walks up and goes, is your name Elliot? Oh, I recognize your voice in the Flophouse. I listened to it. And it made me feel 100 feet tall, which for a guy like me who is roughly 2 feet tall is a great sensation. So,
yeah.
But even better than that, write us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast or tell people about us.
Yeah.
In a good way. Don't tell people about us in the way of like, don't listen to these guys. They're terrible.
Yeah, maybe keep that to yourself.
Yeah. If you're like, if you listen to this podcast, you go insane in 7 days. Don't tell people that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not true, but also
I feel like that would drum up interest, though.
Yeah. That's true, I guess. Yeah, in kind of a Bird Box way, where people are like, now I've got to listen to it."
Yeah. So another Cagemas has come and gone.
Oh man!
But don't be sad.
Till next year.
It's so hard that moment when you take down your Cagemas decorations. You're cleaning up all the wrapping paper from your Cagemas presents. You have to shoo Nicolas Cage back up the chimney out of your house because he started living on your couch. And, you know, you just say goodbye until the next time. But we've got a whole great year coming up ahead of us, guys. 2019. It's going to be good stuff. There's going to be lots of crap movies for us to watch. Aren't you excited?
I can't wait, Elliot. I mean, we haven't even watched Gotti yet.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited about that. You guys, how have we not watched Gotti yet? Why couldn't Nicolas Cage have been Gotti so that we could watch Gotti this month?
He's in Gotti too.
Yeah, I think
like
that's
the
probably
substitute series.
I think that's probably the next one. We've put it off long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just so a little teaser for the next episode. But for now, we should sign off this episode.
Uh-huh.
I've been Dan McCoy.
Yeah, you have.
All right,
and I'm Stuart Wellington.
Okay,
and I'm Elliot Kalin, starring Mary Cagemas, one and all.
Bye.
I had to put Stuart's hair out at one point.
Yeah. At the groom's request, I insisted that Dan McCoy cancel whatever plans he was doing and come to this bachelor party. And I think you showed up after, I don't know, like the 10th round of shots, it feels like. So I was probably really fun to hang out with.
I was talking to Stu, and he put his head down on the bar, and he put it over a candle.
Uh-huh. And that's horrible.
I pulled his head up because it had started smoking, and I like started clapping his hair.
Wait, I think you said that wrong, Dan. It started smoking.
Yeah, and then Stuart said, "Somebody stop me from immolating myself."
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.